Hello, my name is Ann Benson. I'm the directing attorney for the Immigration Project of the Washington Defender Association. I'd just like to say that we are way behind on time, and so we're going to speed this up a little bit, and so please bear with us. In the immediate aftermath of the September 11th attacks, many of the actions taken by President Bush, his administration, and Congress came out of the desperation of the moment. Certainly, some of these actions were necessary and practical steps in response to the gravity of the situation. However, over the past 12 months, President Bush, Attorney General John Ashcroft, and others within the administration have taken a series of actions that we believe are unwarranted, unwise, and threaten our system of democracy. We would like to take a moment to highlight some of these actions. On September 20th, a regulation is issued by the Department of Justice. This regulation allowed for many of the over 1,200 September 11th detainees to be held without charges. On September 21st, the chief immigration judge gives an order permitting certain September 11th special interest deportation hearings to be closed to the public for national security. On September 24th, President Bush issues an order declaring a national emergency. The order requires the executive agencies to utilize all legal means to stem the flow of money supporting terrorist organizations throughout the world. On October 26th, Congress passes and the president signs the USA Patriot Act into law. The act vastly expands the power of the government to monitor, target, and apprehend both immigrants and U.S. citizens. On November 9th, the Attorney General issues a memo directing the FBI to conduct interviews of 5,000 Arab men. On November 13th, President Bush issues an executive order authorizing the creation of military tribunals to try non-citizens alleged to be involved in international terrorism. On November 16th, the Department of Justice states that it will not release the names and locations of the September 11th detainees. On December 14th, the Senate holds hearings on the status of the September 11th detainees. The Attorney General testifies at these hearings that those who question and resist his policies are aiding and abetting terrorism. On January 25th, 6,000 men from al-Qaeda-harboring countries will be the first to be targeted for apprehension under the Alien Absconder Apprehension Initiative implemented by the INS, the FBI, and the Department of Justice. On February 26th, the Department of Justice issues a final report on its project of interviewing 5,000 Arab and Muslim men. 2,261 men were interviewed. No evidence was found to link any of them to terrorism. On March 19th, the Department of Justice announces another round of interviews of 3,000 Arab and Muslim men. In April 2002, the INS launches Operation Tarmac, conducting raids on airports throughout the country in the name of national security. On April 10th, the press reports that the Department of Justice is considering a policy that would allow for local law enforcement officers to have the power to enforce federal immigration law. On June 26th, the president announces his order declaring U.S. citizens Jose Padilla and Yasser Hamdi enemy combatants, but he refuses to release the order. And he says that they can be held until the end of the war on terrorism without access to an attorney and without access to the courts. On July 26th, the Attorney General proposes a rule clarifying that certain immigrants must provide an address to the INS, including a change of address, within 10 days. Failure to do so is a criminal violation and can trigger deportation. August 12th, the Attorney General issues a regulation requiring certain non-citizens from 25 Arab and/or Muslim countries to be fingerprinted and photographed. By September 9th, more than 200 college administrators have been requested by the federal government to provide information on their Middle Eastern students. As of today, none of the over 1,200 Arab Muslim men secretly detained as September 11th special interest detainees has been found guilty of terrorist activity. Most have been deported for minor visa violations. These actions by our government reflect a disturbing vision of national security. This is especially true when seen in light of their results. Most of these actions were implemented with little or no public debate or input from the people about whether or not such actions were appropriate responses to the September 11th attacks. Even today, there is a continued push to quell public debate by implying that those who question our current course are against America. We reject this notion and say that public debate is one of the founding principles of this country and essential to a healthy democracy. There is no proof that sacrificing our human and civil rights will make us more secure. In fact, we believe the opposite is true. We cannot compromise our most basic freedoms in the name of security. If we do, we shall, as Benjamin Franklin said, be deserving of neither. The testimonies you will hear in this section relate to specific people and families in our community that have been the target of these Bush administration policies. Again, we remind you that these are single incidents. For each of these, there are countless more that have not been heard. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is Muhammad Hamwi. I'm a U.S. citizen, and I am 12 years old. I will be speaking today on the behalf of my family. My family came to the United States in 1992. 3 months later, my father left his job as a pilot for the Syrian president and was able to escape Syria and make it to our new home in America, where freedom truly exists. We applied for asylum, got our work permits, and paid for our taxes. Not once did we break the law. We were young and did not know what was going on, but we were happy that my family was alive and with us. It's heartbreaking that such a beautiful country with such wonderful people can have such a hideous and gruesome government. I hope with all my heart that America does not join the club that throws its people into jail for who they are and what they believe in. Then September 11th came along. It was a day of horror and heroism. It was a day that changed America and a nightmare that has not yet ended. On February 22nd, 2002, something happened I never thought possible. For after all, this is America. Yet that morning at 5 a.m., something did occur that would severely revolutionize our life forever. My parents and my sister were stolen away from us. About 7 FBI and INS agents barged into our once wonderful home and dragged them out of bed with guns and flashlights. Now my sister and I have been scattered among homes waiting to see our parents come home in Linwood. I couldn't have even imagined this 1 year ago, but now it's something that I replay every day of my life. My mother, my father, and my 20-year-old sister have been suffering tremendously during their 8-month detention. My mother currently suffers from Crohn's disease. It's a very bad intestinal infection that does not have a cure. She keeps a very strict diet that she has been taken to the hospital too many times, and this proves that they are not providing the proper diet or treatment. Recently, the INS, who I believe caused and ignored a lump in her breast. Her health is drastically deteriorating. My mother honestly believes that if she isn't out of there soon, she will die. My sister suffers from severe kidney stones. She misses food, her bed, her family, and her freedom. It breaks her heart that a country that she loves and calls home since she was 9 years old is making her family go through this just because they're Arab Muslims. As for my father, he left Syria from injustice to find himself locked up in a country that he loves. He kept saying there's justice in this country. I hope justice shows up at our doorstep soon. They feed them oatmeal in the morning, a cup of noodle at lunch and dinner. I don't know if you guys have ever heard someone crying of hunger. Well, we do, every time we talk to them on the phone. Putting all that aside for now, there's even a bigger dilemma. Two federal courts have found serious legal and constitutional questions concerning the case of my family. This includes claims under the Convention Against Torture and Ineffective Assistance of Counsel. Three expert witnesses have concluded that my family will be tortured and possibly killed if they return to Syria. Without immediate attention, my family will remain in custody at the INS facilities. The INS should stop trying every effort to deport my family and reconsider the instant release of my family. I condemn and hold the INS liable for exceeding the bounds of human dignity and justice with unlawful and callous detention of my family. I abhor the abusive mistreatment and the crude measures used by the INS to crush our spirit. I demand that my family be released immediately as mandated by the law, in accordance with the respect for human dignity, human rights, and American law, if not anything, for the sake of us kids. The family should be reunited, so please help. I don't know what I have to lose. I don't want to lose my parents, but I don't want to lose my dad to the government and my mother to illness. They're too good of people to suffer this much. God bless you, and God bless America.
My name is Ricardo Ortega, and I work for Northwest Labor and Employment Law Office. I work with some of the families who has been affecting for the deported raids in the airport of SeaTac. Early this year, Operation Tarmac Records Review put in place to improve security in the airports because of the terrorist attacks, led to the indiscriminate suite in which many people lost their jobs in surprise raids. The INS pursued some employers in SeaTac to collaborate with them, calling phony meetings, dressing up in their employees' uniforms. I want to read this testimony from one person who is afraid to be here and speak out. The INS went to my job and took my papers. Then they come to my house to pick me out. My husband, my cousin, and my three young daughters were there. They looked through my papers, identification, and personal belongings. They deported my cousins. They then deported my cousins to my country. This deeply affects my entire family. I feel sad, and I feel as I throw, this is my fault, because I was working to feed my family, to put a roof over their heads. My husband, my three young daughters, and I were given a court appointment. We went to the court where they decided to deport me to my country. I was given the day when I am voluntarily leave this country. If I leave this country, I will suffer a lot in my country. But if I stay here, I am not in compliance with the rule and regulation of the INS. In order to avoid this deep suffering of separation of whole families created by the deportation and recognize the right dimension of the value of workers, of immigrant workers, we demand the general amnesty and regularization for all immigrant workers. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for your solidarity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. My name is Nassim Tafarha. I'm the director of the Seattle chapter of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. I'll also read testimony on behalf of somebody who was too fearful to publicly give this testimony, and I'll shorten some of the comments in the interest of time. But what I will focus on is this idea that using racial profiling is an effective tool to make Americans safer. And that's an idea that I think there's a serious issue with. People in our community feel like there's a set of standards that apply to them that don't apply to others. They feel like they're presumed guilty until proven innocent, and they feel like they have the burden of walking around trying to prove that they have no real connection to 19 hijackers who happen to share the same ethnic or religious background as they do. This burden is not reasonable, and it's really unfair. And I want to reiterate that it doesn't make us more safe. An example, just last month, there was an uncovering of a very sophisticated and sinister plot to blow up a mosque and hundreds of its worshipers in Florida. And that illustrates the shortcomings of the use of racial profiling to prevent acts of domestic terrorism. The accused individual didn't fit the profile of a perceived terrorist. Hence, he was not under surveillance by the FBI. And this plot was uncovered because it was only after his wife called local law enforcement to report that he had threatened to kill her, and a search of the home was performed, and then they uncovered the plans. So I'd like to read the testimony of one of those locally who was interviewed by the FBI. He was lucky enough not to be detained, and he agonized over whether to come here and speak for himself. But in the end, he decided that it was best for he and his family that he does not do that. Here's his statement. I immigrated to the United States over 8 years ago with hopes of completing my college degree and consequently having the opportunity for building a better future for my family and myself. I have always been active in my community, and I never faced any discrimination or bias. And the fact that I was an Arab and a Muslim was never a negative factor. After September 11th, things changed dramatically for Muslim and Arab Americans. Blamed for sharing the religion and nationality of the terrorists, men with whose characteristics were targeted and sought out for questioning. As I read about the thousands of men who were rounded up after September 11th, I never suspected that I would be included. It was not until I applied for permanent residency status that I learned that the FBI was seeking me for questioning. After months of delay for a paperwork, my lawyer uncovered the reason for the postponement. The INS could not find me, and the FBI was holding my file along with hundreds of other files belonging to students that had emigrated in recent years from Middle Eastern countries. A 45-minute telephone interview ensued, in which I was asked if I was a terrorist. Had I been located earlier, I would have most likely been jailed and interviewed personally until I could be cleared. I have never had any connection to any terrorist organization and never violated the law or went out of status. I was sought only because of my nationality and my religion. My situation is small compared to the many stories of discrimination and injustice that occur every day against Arabs and Muslims in the United States. Most immigrants came to the United States to flee persecution in their own countries, and yet now they are targeted and viewed as a threat by the country that promised them freedom and acceptance. Islam is a peace-loving religion, and to categorize Muslims as terrorists is an injustice. Thank you.
My name is Abdel Nasser Ali Noor. I'm a manager and a partner of the Makkah Mini Market located in Rainier Valley. Approximately 8 o'clock a.m. in the morning on November 7, 2001, a federal agent raided my store. I came to my store. I was personally searched, although I was quickly released. Before I came to the store, half of my groceries were loaded on a truck, as well as my coolers and my shelf units. I was given no explanation for the raid. I later found out that the real target of the raid was a money wiring transfer in my store. Although we have a different business license and different name of the business, the federal agency dumped everything that's perishable in my store, and they have not yet paid. The store suffered a serious damage point. When the government finally allowed me to reopen, I had no groceries and much smaller customers for the business. Like me, such a loss, a lot of business, and for the small business like me, such a loss are terrible and have not yet recovered. Unfortunately, the problem did not end. After my store reopened, I received a letter from the USDA charging me food stamp fraud or food stamp trafficking. And later, on suspend my ability to accept food stamp. Most of my customers are low-income families who depend on food stamps saw my business effectively shut down. Two other Somali stores as well. Happily, after near 5 months, I received a news that USDA has reversed their decision to disqualify us. Although I pleased the outcome, I am very worried that my business and my reputation have been badly damaged or hurt. I have paid emotional toll after September 11. I have now accused twice wrongdoing that I have not committed. This feels very bad to me and my community. Thank you all.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Ana María Rivera.
Good afternoon, my name is Ana María Rivera.
Yo nací en Ensenada, México, y estoy en Estados Unidos desde 1998.
I was born in Ensenada, Mexico, and have lived in the United States since 1998.
Soy una mujer inmigrante que ha sobrevivido la violencia doméstica.
I am an immigrant woman who has survived domestic violence.
Cuando estuve casada con mi esposo Carlos, fui abusada física y emocionalmente.
While I was married to my husband Carlos, I was physically and emotionally abused many times.
Hasta que tuve el valor de salir de la violencia doméstica.
Until I got the courage to leave the domestic violence situation.
Recibí mucha ayuda para salir adelante, yo y mis hijos.
I got a lot of help to get ahead and change my life for me and my children.
Ahora tengo un trabajo y tengo mis papeles para estar legalmente en este país.
I now have a job and papers to be legally in this country.
Muchas mujeres inmigrantes en mi situación, cuando no tenía papeles, no llamábamos a la policía por temor a ser deportadas.
Many immigrant women in my situation, when they don't have papers, don't call the police because they are afraid of being deported.
Cuando dejé a mi esposo y estuve en un shelter y conocí todas las leyes en este país.
When I left my husband and was staying at a shelter and learned about all the laws in this country.
Conocí muchas cosas y entre ellas que la policía no puede fungir como migración.
I learned a lot of things, among them that in this country the police cannot act to deport you.
Porque se supone que la policía está aquí para ayudarnos.
Because the police is supposed to be here to help us.
Ahora tristemente estoy escuchando que la policía quiere, perdón, que migración quiere darle el poder a la policía para trabajar como migración.
Now, sadly, I hear that immigration wants to give police the power to act as immigration agents.
Esto va a crear una situación más tensa para nosotras las mujeres que atravesamos violencia doméstica.
This is going to create a more tense and difficult situation for those of us immigrant women in domestic violence situations.
Ya que de por sí tenemos el temor de la policía, de migración, y ahora de que la policía va a trabajar como migración.
Because as it is, we're afraid of police and afraid of immigration. And now that the police will be afraid that the police will act as immigration agents.
Yo podría decir muchas cosas, pero tenemos muy poco tiempo. El motivo de que yo estoy aquí es para pedir a nuestro gobierno que no le dé el poder a la policía para trabajar como migración.
I could say a lot of things, but we don't have much time. I'm basically here to ask that the government not give the police the power to act as immigration agents.
Porque también le van a dar a nuestros maridos. Porque también le van a dar el poder a nuestros esposos de agarrar un bat y darnos por otro lado.
Because that is at the same time giving our husbands the power to pick up a bat and hit us up the side of the head.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Hillary Hahn, and I'm an immigration attorney. I'm testifying today on behalf of my client, Elias Glacia. He's a 28-year-old Tunisian man. And for the past year, my partner Vicky Dobrin and I have been representing him. Elias has been in this country since 1998 and is married to a United States citizen. Prior to September 11th, Elias had never been arrested in any country nor accused of committing any crimes. Today, he's been in jail for more than a year solely because of unsupported allegations by a former roommate. Elias is a devout Muslim. Last summer, he was living in Tacoma with two fellow Tunisians. A woman named Ann Anderson and her son, Chris, stayed with them for 6 weeks. At the beginning of September, Elias and his roommates asked them to leave since they had to vacate the apartment at the end of the month. then September 11th happened. On September 14th, Elias talked to, Anne made a report to a police officer. According to this report, Anne said that Elias was a Muslim extremist who had expressed his approval of the September 11th attacks. She allegedly told the officer that Elias talked about, quote, killing more Americans. The report also said that Anne overheard him talking on the telephone in Arabic. Although she didn't understand Arabic, she claimed to hear mixed in references to in English to blowing up the Tacoma Narrows Bridge in the INS building. A day later, she seemingly disappeared. Elias was arrested by the INS on September 16th. For the first week or week and a half of his detention, he was held in solitary confinement. When interviewed, he categorically denied making the statements alleged in the police report. The FBI also interviewed Elias. This interview lasted just 10 or 15 minutes. Again, Elias denied ever having made the statements. They've never gone back to interview Elias, they've never interviewed Ann Anderson, and they have never brought any kind of criminal or material witness charges against Elias. Elias was placed in deportation proceedings. The INS has never formally charged him with being a terrorist. However, they have said that the allegations in the police report make Elias a danger to the national security, and that he should not be released from INS detention during his deportation proceedings. INS made little effort to find Ann Anderson, and they presented no other evidence that Elias was a danger to the national security. The immigration judge agreed with the INS, saying that because the police report was made by a police officer, it was true. Meanwhile, Elias applied for asylum. The Tunisian government arrests and tortures many deeply religious young Muslim men because they fit the government's profile of a terrorist. Elias is at even greater risk because he's already been accused by the United States government of being a danger to the national security. A professor at the University of Washington testified and confirmed that Elias is at risk of torture if he goes back to Tunisia. Then in April of this year, before the immigration judge made a final decision, a private investigator hired by somebody in the community found Ann Anderson. When asked about the police report, she said that she had not said those things, and that, more importantly, they were not true. She testified before the immigration judge and again strongly denied that Elias had ever made the statements alleged in the police report. Her son Chris also testified and said exactly the same thing. After Anne testified, the immigration judge denied Elias' request for asylum and he ordered him deported to Tunisia. He said that he still believed that the allegations were true and that Elias is a danger to national security and someone who is likely to engage in, quote, terrorist activities in the United States. Today, more than 1 year after his arrest, Elias remains in INS detention as he appeals the immigration judge's decisions. Thank you.